Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. My name is Alexander Stablowski. I'm the executive producer here, filling in for Jeffrey Davis of Mage LLC, who's the founder of Radio Entrepreneurs and also the host. Just so you know, you can find us on our social platforms, Google, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, YouTube, and also download our app on your smartphones, on your Android, Apple, or even your tablets. Across from me, joining me today, is Sean Lorenz from Center with an S.
With an S.
How are you doing, Sean?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Well, pleasure to have you here.
Thanks.
But be here. Tell me about Center. Tell our listeners what Center does.
Sure. So Center is a relatively new startup based here in Boston. And we help reduce medical expenditure by finding, the sickest people in our population. Oftentimes, 5% of the population costs around 50% of the healthcare dollars. And so really those really sick, the sick of the sick, we want to try to keep them out of the hospital. So what Center does is we use Internet of Things devices. This could be anything from scales to bed mats that go underneath your mattress, to wearables, to connected pill dispensers, to motion sensors. We use all these kind of devices in a home. And then what we do is we use artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms to predict whether or not we think someone is going to actually go back into the hospital, and make sure we alert the doctors, the care providers, the family, as well as the person in the home, to keep them out of the hospital so that it, reduces the amount of costs on the entire healthcare system.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a lot that I have to say is, wow, how did you come up with this idea, and what made you start this company?
Sure. So I think it's been a mixture of things. I think there's, my background, I did my PhD in computational neuroscience at Boston University, and, a lot of people call it deep learning, which is really hot right now. And so my interest has always been in, sensors and data. Only I was studying these sensors, right? Like, how does our touch and taste and smell all kind of combine and then produce a cognitive behavior, right? How do we move? How do we live? And how do our senses actually create that in the brain? So, I started getting in after my PhD into the Internet of Things. I worked with LogMeIn on their Xively platform, which is a big IoT connectivity platform, also based in Boston. And that really is what kind of launched my interest in the Internet of Things. And really, after I left LogMeIn, I wanted to combine those two things. So the intelligence part with the Internet of Things part. So once you have the sensors and the, what to do with the data, I wanted to combine that. And really, at that same time, the Affordable Care Act was launched, and or what Obamacare is what a lot of people call it. And the idea was to transition from fee-for-service kind of medicine to more value-based care. And so because we are now suddenly trying to, instead of put, people in beds in hospitals, we want to keep them out. We want to show that, hey, how can we keep you out of the hospital? And really, how people were approaching this up to, where Center came in is more mobile apps, more kind of, they're called population health management applications, basically managing your care using an app, because that's all we knew. But the future and where things are moving, the Internet of Things, wearables, health, smart health devices, the future is going to be we can just manage your health in our home. And the future of the smart home is actually in your health, I think. And so really that's where the idea came about, was this kind of combination of my background with where we're moving in the healthcare world in the United States and actually across the world, is moving towards more of a health value-based care system.
So with artificial intelligence, you're able to tell when the next time people are going to be in the hospital.
Yeah.
How?
So we're.
Can I ask that question? How?
So we're still pretty.
Don't give too much away.
I'm not going to give any IP secrets here. So really, what we do is we look at time series data. So if you look at kind of the history of where we've gone with artificial intelligence over the past oh my gosh, 40 years or so.
It's amazing.
It's amazing. And really where we started early on was something called rules-based systems. You know, these were expert systems. These were something that were like, if this happens, do this. If or else this, do this. And that's how actually a lot of the old robots were programmed, was that way. But when they were encountered something new, they would just sit in a corner and all stupid and not know what they're doing. So really what we evolved to more in the 80s, and this is where machine-to-machine kind of communication came around. This was the precursor to IoT for manufacturing, for industrial IoT, as it's called now, is really starting to do predictive failure using something called a backpropagation algorithm. And this is kind of, that's kind of the godfather of machine learning and AI now, is the something called backprop, which now is called deep learning. And so really, what we do is we kind of take the next generation of that. And where backprop and deep learning has been used today, if you go to any conference on this stuff, is all in what we know, with the web and mobile. So, you know, Google uses deep learning. The whole core of their artificial intelligence is based on that kind of algorithm, this deep learning algorithm. And what it does is it's really, really good at telling if that's a dog or a cat, or even now what kind of dog that is. And it's really also good at text, so text and images. But where we're kind of moving now is not just text and images, which are static, to something that's more moving, something that's a time series, something that shows the history of something in the past to predict the future. And that's what the Internet of Things is all based on, is sensor data, because it's inherently time sensitive. You know, your temperature at 9 a.m. and then, or 8 a.m., then you turn down the thermostat or turn it up when you leave, and then, you know, it understands that at 9:30, you know, you turn that up. And so it has a pattern over time. And so the whole way we live and move is how we change over time. So what we do is we have algorithms that account for that time. And then what we do is we put them all together with all the different sensors. And that's called sensor fusion. So when you put all that data together, run it through something, you can start to predict based on that sensors whether something's going to be good or bad. And in the case of healthcare, you know, what we unfortunately need are data points where someone goes back into the hospital. So what we can do is say, okay, they went into the hospital, Mrs. Jones went in at 10 p.m., and we want to know why. So we can look back at the data and start to predict on that data so that the next time when we see, okay, that same kind of trend is happening, it sends an alert that says, oh my gosh, this looks like that one time Mrs. Jones went into the hospital. So we learn on that data and then try to predict, you know, if that's going to happen again.
Wow. I mean, artificial intelligence goes a long way. Google knows more about me than I know about myself. Put
that's
it that
true.
Way. But so essentially what sensors doing is saving people's lives. It's reacting quicker than call 911.
Yeah. So we're kind of like an update on a field called remote patient monitoring. And really, you know, in the help I've fallen can't get up, you know, Life Alert, these kind of companies are basically, you know, just 911s, right? They're just ways to get an ambulance to you faster. But what if we could just keep that ambulance out of the equation, right? How can we start to understand how our health happens in the home? This is kind of the holy grail, you know, what oftentimes in healthcare they call it the last mile. And a lot of people have been trying to say they're getting there, but I think until you have a fully kind of immersive kind of Internet of Things kind of environment where we can look at, you know, our eating habits, our sleeping habits, our movements, all this has to be combined in a way that can actually start to reduce chronic illnesses and start to push that needle back. And we're just the very beginning of this. We're just getting started, going to be doing hopefully some clinical pilots to get this started, but we have a long
process,
way to go.
Process.
Yeah, we're just at the very beginning of this in the industry.
So you are in the medical industry, so this will take you about 5 years.
it's been very hard getting the healthcare world. You know, the Internet of Things investors and companies, as well as the AI investors and companies, they all get it. They're like, yeah, let's go. But we don't know healthcare, so bring in some healthcare people to make sure that you aren't crazy, you know. And so it's been really getting the healthcare people on board that's been the most difficult part, because, you know, the healthcare industry is just, it moves slow. It's people based, and it needs, in a certain way, it has to move slow. You need it to move slow, because, I mean, this is actually affecting lives. You know, this isn't a web app where the mantra is, you know, okay, move fast, break it fast, you know, and iterate, right? You can't do that when it comes to real humans. So it, by its nature, it has to move slower. But it's hard, you know, when you're doing something very kind of almost futuristic sounding, but trying to apply it to an old industry.
Because you don't want to be wrong.
That's either, right. And you can't be wrong, because it actually does, you know, involve life or death.
So I was going to, usually the question I ask is, where do you see yourself in 5 years? I think you see yourself in 5 years finally being in the industry and working with the medical practitioners and everything.
Yep.
Where do you see yourself in 10 years, and what do you think our AI is going to go within the next 10 years? Because it is evolving.
It is evolving. The thing that I think, you know, the AI in the press is much more hyped than what it can actually do. Because I think what a lot of people sort of equate artificial intelligence with consciousness. And I actually, before the PhD, I studied artificial consciousness. And can robots be conscious? So it's a big, hopefully one day after, hopefully I see myself 10 years getting to write that book. But I think...
That's a good goal.
It's probably be more like 30. But really, no. I think where we're in AI is actually not as far as you think. You know, we're nowhere near these conscious machines. We're nowhere near them actually making thoughts for themselves or doing actions for themselves in that way. We're actually still using the same algorithms, like I mentioned, from the early 80s. But the only difference now is that we have access to way more data thanks to the internet and mobile phones and IoT. And then we also have ways to crunch it way faster, much, much faster with AWS and Google Cloud and cloud computing that we never had in the 80s. So really, we're just taking older algorithms and we're throwing brute force methods at them that can process a lot more data a lot faster. So they're not very smart. You know, we still have a long way to go on actually adapting the algorithms. And that is starting to happen. So where I would say in 10 years we're going with AI, and you're starting to see this in a lot of the conferences, is we're moving from these older algorithms from computer scientists who know them and know the math, but they don't know the brain. And so really you're starting to see this collaboration between neuroscientists, brain scientists, and computer scientists, and they're starting to work together, and mathematicians, because, you know, the Googles of the world, the Yahoos, the eBays, who are all the ones with the largest data sets, are like, okay, what's next? You know, how do I make this better? They're looking to the brain now, and you'll go to these talks where you'll start to see diagrams of how the hippocampus or the visual cortex works. And I think we're slowly getting there, where we're moving from using the old algorithms just in new ways to using new algorithms based on what works best in our brain.
So I have one more question for you, and this is just because you're very knowledgeable with this stuff. You've obviously read your intel. Do the people want robots to have emotional intelligence?
I don't think so. No, and I don't.
Isn't that scary?
I think it is.
In some
a
ways,
scary. Yeah, I think whether we want it or not, it's going to happen. But I don't think it'll happen in anywhere near our lifetime. I think the kind of intelligence we'll have is different than what we call emotional intelligence or consciousness. Or even in, you know, there's a difference between intelligence and wisdom and knowledge. You know, I think what we're thinking of is some sort of wisdom and conscious perception to make higher level reasoning and more aggregated kind of decisions. And the kind of intelligence we have right now is very dumb. If anybody watches DARPA videos on YouTube,
don't watch my videos.
They're hilarious. These robots are stupid. You know, they're not very smart. They're good at doing one or two tasks really, really well. They're not very adaptive, and we're a long way off from even, you know. And I think when it comes to emotional intelligence, you know, I think we place more emphasis on emotion than we should. Emotion isn't what makes us human. actually, it makes us more like the earliest, you know, smallest animals. You know, it's really the mixture of emotion with cognitive reasoning that actually expands conscious perception. That's what makes us human, is not necessarily the emotion part. It's combined with the other kinds of reasoning, which makes our brain bigger, and putting that all together, that's really the hard part. And getting to that in a robot will take a long, long, long time.
Well, Sean, I would love to pick your brain more.
Well, we'll get beer sometime.
Sounds good to me.
All right.
Sean, if somebody wants to reach you and learn more about what you're doing, because it really is phenomenal what you're doing. It's futuristic. I guess you could put it that way. It's genius. It's innovative. How would they do that? How would they reach out to you and learn more about what you're doing, especially those medical practitioners?
Absolutely. So our website is center.io, and that's S-E-N-T-E-R, so center with an S.io. And then you can also find me. I'm pretty active on Twitter as well, so at SeanLorenz.com.
And on LinkedIn. You're pretty active on that as well.
I'm on LinkedIn a lot too. Yeah.
And also on Radio Entrepreneurs. You can find Sean on Radio Entrepreneurs for the next 45 days. And you could find his video on a platform that we were talking about, YouTube, forever. He's not going anywhere. He'll be there. Sean, thank you for joining us today.
It really was
a pleasure talking to you, and really getting to know all this information was valuable to me. This is Thought Leadership 101.
Cool.
Awesome. Well, we'll be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.